The scripture reading tonight is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12, verses 49 to 56. I came to cast fire upon the earth, and would that it already kindled. I have a baptism to be baptized with, and how I am constrained until it is accomplished. Do you think that I have come to give peace on earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. For henceforth in one house there will be five divided against three, three against two, and two against three. They will be divided, father against son, and son against father, mother against daughter, and daughter against her mother, mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law, and daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. He also said to the multitudes, when you see a cloud rising in the west, you say at once, a shower is coming, and so it happens. And when you see the south wind blowing, you say, there will be a scorching heat, and it happens. You hypocrites, you know how to interpret the appearance of the earth and sky, but why do you not know how to interpret the present time? The word of the Lord.
I am very attracted to the idea of peace on every level. His pure, sweet love on the wings of a dove, not grasping and striving, the opposite of anxiety, the opposite of violence, the opposite of an unceasingly self-conscious mind. Peace is freedom. Some state of being where you don't worry, where anything can happen and you can sort of absorb it without fear, without getting all tense and hopeless, because you have peace. Some soothing sense that really it'll all be okay ultimately. Peace is wisdom and loving kindness, compassion. It's the end of violence. It seems like all I would ever want for the world. Jesus says, Do you think I come to bring peace? No. I come to cast fire on the earth. I find that a little disappointing, to be honest. When Jesus is born in Luke, the angels sing about him bringing peace on earth, good news of great joy for all people. Here Jesus says, you think I come to bring peace on earth? I came to cast fire on the earth, and I wish it was already burning. It seems a little bit, maybe, inconsistent. Is he sweet or kind of jerky? Just before Jesus says, you think I come to bring peace, he gives this little speech where he says, don't be anxious. Consider the lilies. Fear not, little flock, for it's God's good pleasure to give you the kingdom, and it sounds all soothing and serene. But I think there must be something fire-like about the love of God, too. Something that burns and disrupts and disturbs. When Jesus is born, the angels sing about peace. But when Jesus is a boy, his parents take him to the temple, and the priest says, now that I've held this child, I have seen salvation. It will mean light and goodness, and it will mean a sword will pierce through your own soul, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. Kind of beautiful, maybe, kind of ominous also. Like what's hidden and buried and true will bleed through this place where the sword pierces your soul and your insides will be exposed. I'd rather lay in a hammock on my screen porch and read a novel, to be honest. Or have a glass of wine and feel the breeze coming through the screens. Anyway, something less painful than a sword through the soul, than fire. I mean, I guess I can see how fire is essential to life. If you're like dying of hypothermia, Or like for the prehistoric people that discovered it, you have to cook your meat so you can't be poisoned by bacteria. But being burned by fire is one of the most excruciatingly painful experiences a human can endure. So it's kind of an intense metaphor for Jesus to use. Is it just some like blustery statement he's making from some mean place inside of himself? Like, you think I come to be nice? What, are you some lily-loving mouse? I'm like fire. I'm gonna burn stuff up. That may have the sound of something revolutionary, but it's so old, so not. I mean, what leader have we had in the last forever? What revolutionary leader or status quo leader or president of any country anywhere has tried to protect and govern their country by being nice? What CEO or prime minister or crown prince has thought you could save the world through being kind? You almost wish they would try. It almost seems like that might work. But no earthly being is going to maintain any sort of position of power by being nice. That isn't really a very radical notion. Fiery rhetoric, a strong hand, a narcissistic sort of tendency toward exaggerated feelings of self-importance, commanding presence. There's nothing radical in that. That's simply how you become a leader sort of across the spectrum. We have an obsession as human beings with power. Powery talk, powery presence. We love power. We follow power. Jesus says he comes to cast fire on earth, and some people dig it, like, awesome. He's not afraid to be aggressive. Jesus is no peace-loving, hippy-dippy idealist. This is a guy that gets in your face. He's not soft. He's a man, masculine. You need someone to show you the way? Are you going to go with the lily guy or the fire guy? Most people follow the power every time, even when it's not good for them. It's the way the world has been working for thousands of years. This could just be me trying to salvage a little bit of my faith. But I don't think Jesus is that predictable, that kind of leader. I think that maybe the gospel, the kingdom of God, God, are always a little hard to see because they don't follow the patterns you've constructed or had constructed for you in your mind. They don't follow any patterns that have been constructed to order the world. Fire has a kind of power, but you wouldn't call it a power structure. Fire almost seems like the opposite of structure. Fire burns down structures. Jesus says here in this place that he comes to divide father against son. We might sort of glance over that and think it's not that big a deal, or it means just something like might happen in an election. Like, I'm for Jesus, I'm not for Jesus, and the house is divided. But it's really a much bigger revolutionary idea than that. Jesus is saying that he is going to knock over the most basic, the most essential building block for the system that ran the world. In first century Palestine, there was no means to have a place in society except through family. You don't leave your family to make a life. There was no life apart from it. Everything that came to you came through family. There was no way to get honor except through your family. There was no way to get a means to make a living or a money or a wife or a husband. You married your cousins. There was not really much hope for anybody outside of family. Everything was about the bloodlines that connected you to your father. Without it, you were nothing, had nothing. It's sort of like if you were hooked up with a man, you existed. If you weren't hooked up with a man, you didn't exist. Some people have often called this patriarchy. So the Father and the Son, that's almost like saying the power and the glory. This relationship was the most essential brick in the edifice. In Roman culture, fathers actually had the power of life and death over their children. When the baby was born, a father would look at it or not look at it and decide whether to acknowledge it and rear it or expose it and throw it away. Fathers had legal rights to sell their children into slavery or execute them. Fathers were like the absolute authority in the system that ran the world. The Emperor Caesar Augustus insisted that he was not a king, but the father of the fatherland. But if a father didn't have a son to carry on the mantle for him, then they were nothing. They had nothing. And if a son didn't live up to it, didn't learn to be a masterful man, a strong hand, a good patriarch, if the son didn't obey the father, it brought terrible shame to the whole family. You sort of had to play by the rules of the power structure, or simply nothing was going to work for you. And it wasn't like the only thing you had to do to be a good patriarch was dominate your females. You brought honor to your family by dominating as many other men as possible. Boys had to learn to be aggressive, demonstrate self-mastery and mastery over others. Patriarchy was about dominating, competing, coming out on top in the public realm, playing the game, and the lessons all began in the home with the father and the son. So Jesus comes and he says, he's going to blow this up, set it on fire. He's not going to play by the rules. He says he's going to break up the brick of the family. Not because he's trying to cultivate in people negative feelings toward their parents, but because he was overturning the power structures of the world. Jesus isn't being some typical patriarchal spun, aggressive, strutting power player dominator. He is trying to deconstruct the whole notion of domination. Jesus is actually a bad son to his earthly father. I mean, you hardly hear anything about Joseph at all. He's not even mentioned after the third chapter of Luke. Measured by the social codes of Deuteronomy, Jesus was a stubborn and rebellious son. A glutton and a drunkard is what they called bad sons. He went around sharply diminishing rather than dutifully increasing the honor of his own blood ties. Poor Joseph. The whole thing must have been mayhem for Joseph. Imagine your father has a son with God, supposedly, and then the son goes gallivanting all over the country, contributing nothing to your family. Jesus goes around asking, who are my brothers? Who is my mother? Offensively, sort of disavowing any binding blood ties. And he compounds his outrageous anti-familial behavior by urging others to imitate him. Don't bury your father. Don't even look back. If you don't hate your family, you aren't following me. That's really something kind of crazy. Part of the good news, according to the gospel of Jesus Christ, actually seems to be that there are no fathers you must serve, except God. And I just don't think God demands the same sort of service as Caesar. I don't think Jesus is trying to create in you a lack of affection for your dad. I think his way is, he's doing it this way because if there's going to be any sort of real and thorough and non-rivalrous peace for all humankind, absolutely all of humankind, if there's good news of great joy for all people, it's going to come from outside the system that runs the world. It is not going to come from navigating the system that runs the world on power and money and rivalry and domination and self-interest. Jesus is not going for the father, master, domination, power player, climb the social hierarchy model. He's exploding it. And you know what? It's embarrassing after 2,000 years how much we, the church, the powers that be, leaders everywhere, are still clinging to the cracked up pieces of rubble. It is so obviously not working for the world. I mean, what might it take to save the world or someone? Probably it can't be done in the usual way of governors and masters and presidents. The way of Jesus is something that pierces through your soul. I don't think it's a way out of our weakness and frailty and humanness and vulnerability. I think it's a way in. No wonder we resist it. Jesus says he comes to cast fire, he has a baptism to be baptized with, and he's dragged before the accusers, and he doesn't get out. You think if anyone should enjoy the privileges of a prestigious family, the Son of God might? But that is not at all the way it goes down. Jesus gives up power. Jesus gives up privilege. We say that a lot here. We're so used to hearing it that it maybe doesn't really even seem that stunning, but it is. It is really not something that people who have it usually do with it. When Mary feels the baby Jesus moving inside her, she says, "He has put down the mighty from their throne." Well, it must have been obvious to her. God is not out there on high somewhere, father of the fatherland. God is kicking around inside of her. Jesus puts down the mighty God from his throne. And Jesus keeps working this weird way. Is crucified, dies, and is buried. His side is pierced, and the blood and the water run out of the hole in his side. And there is really something messy and painful and vulnerable and exposing and heartbreaking in it. Jesus reveals that our hope is not in power, but in something much more unusual. How can we follow him?